Hello and welcome to this episode of the Independent Dealer Podcast. Today we have the famous Craig Anthony of Flying Wheels.
Craig, hello everyone.
Appreciate your time.
Thanks for being here. And I tell you guys and gals, you got to listen to this. This is really cool. I'm a geek about YouTube, but not the geek that Craig is. Craig is sharing his time, sharing his expertise, and get out your camera, make a video today, and that'll make Craig proud.
I'm going to start the same way I always do in all my YouTube videos. Hey, everyone out there. Thanks for watching me at Flying Wheels. If you're into anything auto-related, make sure to hit subscribe down below and watch this and listen to this entire podcast so we can get all of our information over to you regarding the auto industry and car dealer life in general.
Welcome to the Independent Dealer Podcast, the podcast for auto dealers to learn and grow together. Here are your hosts, Luke Godwin and Jeff Watson.
All right. We have got Craig Anthony here. Craig, he is in New Hampshire. He's got a dealership. Now, is the name of your dealership Flying Wheels?
It is, yes.
Awesome. And you've got a huge YouTube channel. Craig is the go-to guy for auto dealers doing YouTube right. Craig, tell us a little bit. Just give us the summary. What's your background? Where did you come from? How did you get into this stuff?
I come from generations of car guys. So my great-grandfather came here from Italy in 1918, owned a couple garages, gas stations. My grandfather is an auto tech teacher. My father's an auto tech teacher. My brother is insurance adjuster for auto damage and claims. And I just don't have the patience to work on cars. I despise working on cars, but I like driving cars. Mm-hmm. And I like making money. So I started with bicycles. And as a kid, I'd buy a bike, clean it, fix it, sell it for something different, trade it for something different, turn it into dirt bikes in high school. I paid my way through college flipping cars, and it wasn't so much to make money. It was more, I'd buy something, drive it, get bored, sell it for more money, go buy something for more money. And then, you know, it just kept growing from there. Mm-hmm. One day I was living in Florida, and I got a call from the RMV in Florida, the DMV in Florida, saying I sold too many cars that year. So I was an unlicensed dealer and I needed to get my license. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the push I needed.
You're that darn curbstoner that everybody's angry about, right?
I was not curbstoning. No, I wasn't. I was registering all my cars. I just happened to get bored too quickly. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't doing it for a job. It was more for a hobby. I would buy something, and I remember that last one was a Volvo C70 convertible. I drove it for like 3 months, but that was like the sixth or seventh car that really pushed me over the edge. And that supplemental income was actually pretty equivalent to what my 70-hour work week income was. So I transitioned, went all in, and became a car dealer, opened my own car dealership, and figured all the hoops I had to jump through to get there.
So Craig, so you were living in Florida at the time. Did you open in Florida to start with, then move to New Hampshire, or how did that work?
I'm from New Hampshire, so I learned how to run a business in New Hampshire. My father has owned several businesses throughout my life. We went to Florida for grad school and to enjoy ourselves in our young 20s. And I did start my first car dealership in Florida. Grew it enough to sell it, so we sold it to somebody that I had known that was interested in the business. I trained him, taught him how to run the business, and he purchased it, and I moved home to have kids and start a family.
So what year did you open the dealership you currently own? And it's called Flying Wheels, is that correct?
Yeah, Flying Wheels opened in 2010.
Okay.
So we've been around just 10 years next month, 10 years in January.
Did you, so I guess we're going to dive right into the YouTube. So when you opened up the dealership, was that part of your marketing philosophy in 2010? Or did it come out of something that you saw the market moving to, or were you already on YouTube doing something else?
I wish I got into it in 2010, because it would be like buying Manhattan in 1898. YouTube wasn't a thing back then. It was Craigslist. Craigslist was really the only free form of marketing back then. I think it happened accidentally. I made a video of my son playing with monster trucks in like 2012, 2013. And I didn't want to lose the video. So I just uploaded it to YouTube. Like a year later, it had 1 million views. Just kids watching kids.
Wow.
So he actually gets paid still to this day on all of his videos via YouTube AdSense. So advertisers pay YouTube. YouTube pays him, and he gets a direct deposit. So he does pretty well for a nine-year-old kid. But I did I was on a car show with my brother in 2014 called Mud, Sweat, and Gears out in California. And we just had an absolute blast for a week. We flew out there. We built a car. We raced the car at Willow Springs Raceway and just had an amazing time. And from then on, I kind of fell in love with the back end of television. And in New Hampshire, there's not much of that going on. So I kind of went out on my own reviewing cars. I also raced drift cars. So I researched quite a bit. It was pretty extensive to figure out how to put an LS1 Corvette engine into a Nissan 240SX. It took me months and months of research. So to help the next person, I documented the build piece by piece, video by bit, video by video. So if you Google how to swap an LS1 and a 240SX Nissan, many of my videos will come up. That was the start. Those videos took off. The keywords really helped the videos grow and the page grow. Then it was more how to reset oil change lights, little things, how to's. And then people really started to get interested in the dealership and asking questions. What's that car in the background? Tell me about that. And that's how it really grew organically. That's a truly organic YouTube channel.
What's funny is I was looking back to see when I first published my first YouTube video for our dealership, and it was actually 9 years ago. So it was 2010, I guess. And, I remember going to conferences and seeing that everybody's talking about doing the walk around. And of course, you know, I don't know how many videos I have on there, but I've got a lot, and most of them are walk arounds. But I didn't notice that we still get inquiries about the walk arounds from years ago. Oh, you still have that car, you know, but the how to's are so much more powerful than a walk around per se. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think you hit on something early on that a lot of people probably didn't. Did you just notice that was the way to go, or were other people doing it? How did you figure out that how-to type?
Again, it was kind of something accidental. A lot of the stuff I did for selfish reasons. So my wife's minivan, her Toyota Sienna, five oil changes later, I still couldn't remember how to reset that oil change light. So I made a video and I posted it on my YouTube channel so I would remember next time I did an oil change, okay, this is how I reset that light. Other people started watching it. And we own a service shop too. So we do a lot of service and repairs that take us a lot of time to figure things out.
Sure.
So I'll post those videos up to help other people, which brings traffic over to our channel, which gets subscribers, which gets followers to watch more videos. So somebody might click to watch a reset light on a Volvo S60, and then they start subscribing, and then they know flying wheels. So next time they think of something, they think, oh, flying wheels. It transitions easily over to Facebook, and your Facebook friends start noticing what you do more and more. So when you're posting your videos to My Flying Wheels Facebook, they start thinking and directly relating Craig and Flying Wheels to, oh, I need a new car. So I get a lot of traffic, not so much, and a lot of sales, not so much from a very specific video, but from people always having me on top of their heads.
So I want to stop you. I want to stop you and ask something real quick, because what I understand is Facebook doesn't like YouTube. So are you taking the raw footage that you would send to YouTube and taking that raw footage and send it to Facebook, or are you linking your YouTube video to your Facebook page? What are you doing there?
That's really difficult and a great question. So obviously Facebook and Google are two separate entities, and Facebook does not like to promote YouTube videos. So it's really difficult to get organic traffic for a YouTube video on Facebook. It's a fight every time. So it is more beneficial to post a video directly up into your Facebook page. Depends on the angle you're going. Facebook isn't conducive to creators. You might see a lot of advertisements 15 seconds into a video on Facebook, but those creators aren't getting paid for it. So when I'm spending this much time and investing this much time in creating content, coming up with the ideas, editing the videos, putting it out there and then marketing the videos, I'm not going to do it for free,
sure,
which is what Facebook wants you to do. So I'm still pushing my YouTube videos onto Facebook, and you can also boost those posts to help grow them, but then you're paying for it.
So do you? So you're getting paid for your YouTube channel and what's going on there? You know, by people advertising on your channel, correct?
Yeah. So when you watch a clickable ad or a skip ad in the front of a YouTube channel, during the banners that go through your videos at the top or the bottom, those are paid advertisers. They pay YouTube. YouTube pays us in ad revenue.
How many subscribers do you have to get up to before you can start getting paid?
It's 1,000 subscribers and I think 10,000 minutes, which really, that's the hardest milestone to get to. Everybody wants to start a YouTube channel. I mean, you guys have a podcast, so you know how difficult it is to actually generate that first entry-level bit of traffic. That's the breakthrough point. And getting that first 1,000 is really difficult. Because it's just it's so flooded with viewers and content creators already.
That'd be my question, Craig. For dealers that are messing around with it, or that want to get into it, or they need to get into it more, is it too saturated? Is it too flooded? Is there still space for us?
I think it is absolutely extremely saturated, and it's very difficult for people and frustrating. So starting, just like any business, starting anything, this is a full-time job for me. I run my dealership during the day. I'm constantly thinking about creating content. So this morning I came to my shop and we had purchased a 08 Jeep Wrangler through ACV online, and it was delivered last night. So before we even touched it, I had to make a walk around video of it. When most people should think about running their business as a priority, which I do, I also have to think about creating content as a priority at the same time. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times, hey, don't buff those headlights yet. I still have to take a before and after. So that's constantly on my mind. So it's a lot of work. It's difficult.
Sure is. You do that with every car?
The interesting stuff. So there's a niche market. Yeah, there's a niche market for Jeep Wranglers. There's a niche market for Mustangs and Corvettes. So those make it easy to create content for me. The Focuses and the Dodge Darts and stuff that's not so interesting, I kind of parlay them. I roll them into videos. So my most recent was what to do during recession, how to sell cars when your cars aren't selling, or what you should be doing when your cars aren't selling. And it was a day at the auction, and the goal was to, or the theme was to, I said like in sync, buy, buy, buy. You know, it's slow. No one's buying. Nothing selling, so go out and buy more stuff.
Yep.
People are selling the products, you know, the demand is higher, the prices are higher on the supply, mm-hmm. so you should be out buying right now. Well, in that video, I bought it was silly stuff, like an 01 Toyota Celica. I bought a BMW X5, something I'd never create a video about, but I rolled those into the video, and then I said at the end, hey, these are for sale too. You can see them on our website. We should have them done in about a week. Now, I posted that last night. We have 3,500 views this morning when I woke up. Oh, so 3,500 people unintentionally know that I have a BMW X5 and a Celica and a Jeep Wrangler that I bought this week. So mm-hmm. those work really well for me.
Yeah, I think what dealers need to understand, though, like you said, this is like it's a full-time job for you. You know, it's not like dealers think they can just roll out and throw up a video every week or two and expect their YouTube channel to take off or have any kind of traction. Like, you've got to commit to it. And like you said, you're always thinking of ideas. You're always looking for new interesting angles or things to put out there.
Yeah, you have to make people want to watch it. What are you putting out? Why is it interesting to someone else? And the good thing is, if you're into adults playing with Legos, there's a million other people, a million other adults that like to watch Lego builds. So there's something for everyone out there. You just have to find what your niche is.
And that would be the key. I think the more niche you are, the better off you are, right?
I completely agree. There's the market, like we had said, is so saturated with videos that you can type in like that new Tesla truck that came out. There's already a million videos out about it. But if you talked about one specific thing on that Tesla truck, it comes up in keywords, and that's how people find you. And someone might be more interested in how the engine works on that instead of how terrible the design is. So there's a lot of videos out there in specifics, and that's what people are looking up on Google that are going to help find your channel.
Craig, you said keywords a couple times, and I felt like I always struggled when we would do keywords into our videos. Is it intuitive that if I talk about or let's just say replacing an alternator, you know, alternator should be my keyword. You know, what else am I looking for when we do keywords?
So alternator is not the keyword. Let's say it's for a 2001 Toyota Celica. 2001 Toyota Celica alternator is the keyword, the key phrase. So when somebody types in alternator, it's very unlikely your car is going to come up.
Right. I got it now. Okay.
But someone typing in 2001 Toyota Celica alternator or 100,000 people typing in 2001, obviously I shouldn't have used an old vehicle as a reference, but 2012 GMC Acadia alternator.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have people made a video about that? Not often. How many times have people made a video about how to replace an alternator? Millions.
Billion, yeah.
So when you bring that down to something small, it actually grows what you're trying to produce.
That's so interesting. And is that the only keyword we should use?
No, not at all. They'll allow you to. So GMC Acadia, Chevy Traverse.
Gotcha.
You know, it's something similar that's going to bring those people in. And you want to use as many as you can relating to that car. So if I do anything Ford Mustang related, Saline's the keyword, Roush is a keyword, Shelby GT500, Shelby GT350, everything you can think of relating to Mustang or Corvette or whatever that vehicle or video might be, I think of everything I can, and any question somebody would Google, type in Google, and make that into my keywords.
Do you use a website to get those, or is it intuitive to you?
Both. They have websites that will generate keywords for you, a keyword generator, and they're really, really helpful. Oftentimes, I've done it so many times now, I can cut and paste. So if it's a Mustang video, I know. If it's a Corvette or a Jeep, I just go in, I cut it all, and then paste it in.
You recommend a iPhone to use, iMovie. How do you recommend a dealer, you know, going out and getting started, trying to produce some video that'd be helpful to their dealership? What kind of equipment do you recommend that we start with?
Oh, sure. That's actually an easy one because I have a lot of experience with that. So I've hit a point right around 25,000 subscribers. I hit a point where people started sending me free stuff. And they want me to push it out on my Amazon page or their Amazon page onto my channel. So, hey, try this camera. So I've tried plenty of cameras. I've tried plenty of cameras in the past. And the one that still works best for me is my phone. And the reason I say that is because it's always on me. A GoPro works well. They're small. The fisheye sometimes comes off a little funny looking. And I'm sorry, my phone's ringing in the background. Is that going to mess everything up?
We have all kind of crazy all the time. So don't worry about it.
All right, good. It's done. We can continue. So GoPro has a fisheye lens, which kind of makes everything look a little funny. And also it's hypersensitive to volume, to background noise. So if you don't have a windsock and an attached microphone, the volume quality or sound quality is really terrible. My phone has great sound quality. It has great camera quality, and it's always on me. Mm. So rather than having it, and again, I'm always thinking content creation. Oh, I just pulled into my shop. There's a Jeep Wrangler that was dropped off overnight. Rather than me having to go find my GoPro or camera and set up the camera, make sure the battery's fully charged, my phone's right there on me. Yeah. I have editing apps on my phone. Now it obviously gets more elaborate as you progress, but generally speaking, iMovie, and if you have an Android, there are thousands of free apps you can download and edit videos right down to whatever you want to create. It's actually really easy once you get the hang of it.
Craig, what's the optimal time on a video that you feel?
General audience retention is about 2.5 minutes. Okay. Children are a lot less. So like I said, my son has a YouTube channel and their attention span's about 90 seconds. Adults unrelated to something specific. So if you're watching a how-to video, chances are they'll watch your video in its entirety. If it's just a clickable video and they're not familiar with you, about 2 minutes and 30 seconds. So if I am watching, actually the easiest way to do it, when I'm creating my videos, if I start watching my video and I notice that I pick up my phone to maybe go on Instagram or Facebook, I've lost myself. If I'm losing myself, how am I going to retain anyone else? So now I know I need to change wherever I lost.
Would you break, if the video was more than 2.5 minutes, let's say what we're trying to demonstrate is 12 to 15 minutes. Would you break it into segments to retain an audience, or what would you do there?
I do a lot of clip-ins, but my videos are not 2.5 minutes. The walk-arounds for cars, so if a customer is interested in a vehicle, can I mute my phone real quick?
Yeah.
Sorry, this is ridiculous. Sorry, guys. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if I am introducing a car to a customer through email, text message, through a Facebook Messenger, I will make that video under 2 minutes, because that's that attention span where people don't really care after 2 minutes. But an informative video like I create, usually Sundays and Thursday nights, we do our premieres and people join in and watch a video in its entirety. 8 minutes is normal. 8 to 12 minutes, if it's a good video with a lot of clip-ins, is perfectly fine. You don't want to sit and watch somebody talking to a camera for 12 minutes straight. So I try to introduce new clips into each segment. So if I'm talking about different pointers, I'll break it, make a video of the car or whatever I'm doing, and then it goes back and forth to keep people's attention a little bit longer. But I try to keep 10 to 12 minute videos typically, and I do it for monetization purposes. I get paid the longer people watch, retention. So we're averaging about 2 million minutes a month that people are watching on our channels.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
How long does it take you to edit a video that's 12 or 15 minutes long?
Oh, well, you know, right now I at a time, I probably have six or seven videos at a time going.
Okay.
Think about how many cars you have on your lot. There's always something moving. So I have a Hummer H2 that we're building. I have a Jeep Wrangler that I just bought. I have, so many other, it's always an idea of the next video.
Wow.
So the hardest part is trying to not lose the videos, because I might have a Hummer, a Thunderbird, and a Jeep video.
Yeah.
A Hummer and a Thunderbird and a Corvette video, and I have to go back and find them all and put them in the correct folders. That's time consuming.
Yeah.
Once I get them in the correct folders, it's a matter of just cutting them down and splicing them together.
Hmm.
It's become pretty efficient though. Once I learned the program, my video last night was 12 minutes long. It took me about 45 minutes to make. I made it during my son's soccer practice, so it wasn't so bad.
not during a game, but during practice. Okay.
Right.
And you do that from your iPhone or through your computer?
It depends on the video. If there's a lot of splicing together, I do it on my laptop. It's a lot more efficient, and I can get it done quicker on my laptop and cut closer. So I can cut it down to the millisecond on my laptop versus my phone. You're doing a lot with your finger.
Yeah.
So it's a lot more difficult on your phone, but it works. So if, again, what I might be doing is probably very different from that entry level YouTube blogger or car dealer that just wants to put cars up. I was in Orlando last week at a dealer meeting, and I was talking to a couple other dealers about just making videos. And well, how do we edit it? How do we cut it together? Don't edit it. Just make it a 2-minute video of you walking around your vehicle, and then hit stop and you're finished.
Yeah, hit upload.
Yeah, and hit upload. It can be that easy. But when you're creating real content that's informative and you have multiple pieces, it gets time consuming.
So if a dealer isn't competent or doesn't feel competent, is there a point where you would ever hire someone? I mean, and I ask that question because that's what I've done here. I did it for myself for a while, and I got to the point where I knew I wasn't good enough and didn't have the time. And so I hired we have a full-time girl that does our content and social media creation. Do you find any production value in that? Or for you, you say, hey, I can do it better than me hiring someone else out, and it doesn't make any sense for me.
I'm putting out a story, and it's my story. And I don't think somebody can create my story the way I would create my story. So that's the reason I do it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's me. There's a lot of other people that aren't as technically savvy. Let's say they're a different generation, an older generation. Maybe they're not as into it as somebody that knows Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Facebook, and everything else. Who knows TikTok better than a 19-year-old or a 20-year-old? And if their job is to play on social media and make great content for you, they're going to be more into it than you will when you could care less about social media. So I absolutely would recommend it if it's not your thing.
Yeah.
There's somebody out there that knows exactly what they're doing and how to generate traffic and knows the algorithm better than you ever will. And they enjoy doing it.
Yeah. And I just found my consistency wasn't there. I get distracted. I'd have a whole week or two because we were so busy at the dealership or something came up and I would stop posting and then I got out of the habit. Or they would get past my technical abilities where I decided that my audio was bad or my video, you know.
Yeah.
I really just hate that I've got away from the consistency that we had, because even from just doing walk-arounds, I saw what it did to sell cars all over the world. I tell you, it's amazing how people just, you know, go on YouTube and search a certain car and it comes up, and next thing you know, they're calling you off YouTube. And it still happens today on cars I sold 5 and 6 years ago. And I guess that brings me to another question for you, Craig. If we've sold a car a long time ago, but we want to, in my opinion, we still want to leave that content on YouTube, is there a way to kind of get away from that, or should we leave it up? Should we take it down? Should we mark it sold? How do we do that, you think?
There's two things I could say to that. And the first one is, again, I monetize everything. So the more views, the better for me. The more views means the more money. Right. So I would leave all my content up for that reason.
Yeah.
For a dealer aspect, though, I get calls from vehicles from years ago.
Yeah.
For people wondering if the car is sold. I like using examples. I have an 05 Jeep Wrangler Rubicon Unlimited, which to me was the ugliest of all the Jeep Wranglers. That's that extended Jeep Wrangler. Well, as soon as I put it on Instagram, I took it in trade. I was not impressed with this Jeep at all. I put it on Instagram and just said, "Hey guys, I just picked up this Rubicon Unlimited. What do you guys think I should, what do you think I should do?" My Instagram direct messages exploded. My inbox exploded with Jeep lovers that says, "You don't understand what you have. You have the holy grail of Jeep Wranglers. This is the best Jeep ever built for this, this, and this reason." I had articles sent over to me. I had no idea.
That's
so
funny.
For a Jeep that I would have maybe marketed for 11 or 12 grand, I sold it the first day for 14 grand.
That's now, great, man.
That's something I didn't know about. So I was informed by my viewers, and then I sold it to my viewers. I sold it to somebody in New Jersey, and it's the walk-around video was the secondary seller. So they found the car through my social media. Then I sent them a video to kind of close the deal and secure them on the car so they knew what they were getting. And now I can just ship it. So it makes it a lot easier for me.
Hmm. What something you just said, it just really enlightening for me. You talked about how your users inform you on a lot of stuff. I mean, that's not even an aspect I looked at. Does that happen a lot? Because, you know, we think we're car dealers and we know everything about cars, but there are so many people that are so just uniquely geeked out about certain cars that, and they know way more than we do. Does that happen a lot?
Absolutely. And I love, part of the audience retention is audience involvement.
Okay.
So if I can get people to watch and interact, my videos skyrocket tremendously, and customer retention does too, or audience retention skyrockets. They want to be involved. They don't want to just watch. And that's the beautiful thing about the internet. You're not just watching television anymore. You're watching and interacting with your audience. They're talking with the creator. It's really a great world we live in now, because I bought, and I'm going to use the example, the Jeep Wrangler that I used this morning. I put it on Instagram as soon as I got to the shop. This is the Jeep Wrangler. What should I do to it? I'll build it how you want. You guys tell me. I did the same thing with a Hummer H2. They built the Jeep. I built the Jeep how they, I will build the Jeep how they want me to build the Jeep. I built the Hummer how they want me to build the Hummer.
Hmm.
And a lot of times I'll sell it for that reason when I'm finished. And they like to see it start to finish from the beginning to the end.
Wow.
That's crowdsourcing a build is so cool. I never even thought about that. Like we do these, you know, trucks every once in a while. And what I think looks great, a lot of people go, "Oh, I wouldn't have done that." So it's cool. Crowdsource it, build it. And then you pretty much already got a buyer at the end, right?
Right. And I have a theme too. When I build Jeep Wranglers, they're almost always the same. I know the parts to buy. We know how to install them. They're very cookie cutter, which is efficient for us. And I know they're going to sell. But I don't always know what's out there, what's best for a Jeep Wrangler, for example. So by asking my audience, what would you guys do? What products should I change on it? What should I use? Helps me change the vehicle into also another a different demographic. And it keeps it current. I find new products and it keeps the audience involved. And a lot of times they'll contribute just with their, they'll show their history involvement. So, hey, I like this one a lot more than you did the other Wrangler. So they watch all of them. And again, it's not just about them watching my videos. It's about turnover in the long run, me selling that Jeep. So when they say, oh, I didn't like that one, but I like this one. Well, they're always thinking Jeep Wrangler now. Next time they think Jeep Wrangler, someone's going to buy a Jeep Wrangler or a friend's going to buy a Jeep Wrangler. It doesn't matter if they're in New Hampshire or Minnesota. Hey, I follow a guy that builds Jeep Wranglers in New Hampshire and he ships them all over the country. Go check him out. And then they look me up and now I have a customer that way as well.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that'd be my question for you, Craig, is how do you, for those dealers that think this is a kind of a, it doesn't actually translate into dollars and cents, you know, how do I get exposure from my buying base? You know, how do I get it out there to the people in my community that are actually going to show up on my lot and purchase this car that I did this walk around? Does that still translate for you?
Yeah. And again, I am so different than generally speaking car dealers on YouTube. I do it for content creation and not just for sales. And it probably takes away from my sales because it's so time consuming. If I invested as much time as I do into YouTube, into the car dealership, I'd probably push out more sales in traditional ways. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoy content creation far more than I do even owning a car dealership. I guess I get all my good content from owning the car dealership and
yeah.
You know, washes the other.
Craig, what's your normal hour spent per week doing YouTube and creating content?
It's 50-50. It's a lot of work on both ends, but mm-hmm. again, I enjoy it. So how much time do you put into your old pickup in the garage that you're working on, you know? The same thing. I enjoy it as a hobby. So I don't look at it monetarily, even though it works out monetarily. Mm-hmm. I look at it as, oh, I enjoy this. Other people are enjoying it. People are entertained and it's fun for me to do. So that's why I do it.
This is so interesting to me. And I think maybe to sum it up, if what you do on your YouTube channel is probably different than anybody that's listening to us. I mean, it's a career for you, you know, what would you encourage someone who's, you know, got a YouTube channel but doesn't use it a lot or a dealer? What is the best way for us just to start and just to do it? What would you say? This is what you need to do.
Sure. Let's say dealer specifically and not in my format. As a car dealer, our jobs are generally interesting. I mean, not our everyday going back and forth with customers and actually selling a car. That might not be that interesting. But if you think about it, for car guys, we buy a different car every day. That's pretty neat. And whether it's, again, a Mustang, a Corvette, a Jeep, or even a Toyota Corolla, there's somebody that owns each of those that are interested in those. As a dealer, I would focus more on using all of social media, not just YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, and all the others, Twitter and Reddit, to grow your business organically. So you can use YouTube without it being time consuming, opposite I do, just produce vehicle content. What mm-hmm. is your inventory? Put it on YouTube. YouTube isn't going to sell you a car generally. People aren't going to go to YouTube and look up Toyota Corolla for sale. But to use that video that you've made in your advertisements really helps your sales on the back end. My close rate is tremendous just based on my videos. Getting a customer to the door, knowing the vehicle, knowing the imperfections specifically, knowing everything about the car, and even seeing my face helps them feel like they already know me and are more comfortable with the car when they show up to my lot. That's what I'd focus on as a dealer. And we're not talking about editing. We're just talking about taking your phone out. Instead of taking pictures, or when you're taking pictures, take a video and post it onto your YouTube channel and send that link out to other people. You can use that same video to post to your Facebook page. You can take a shorter video and post it to your Instagram, and hashtags on everything other than YouTube, essentially, hashtags really help grow your following as well. People will find you. So if you're on Instagram and you just post a car with no hashtag and no followers, no one's going to see that video. Now post that same Jeep Wrangler and hashtag Jeep Wrangler. Everybody in the world that follows the hashtag Jeep Wrangler that's on Instagram at that time is going to see your car and then follow over your page, hopefully. And that's the idea. And really, you just want people to think of you and your name when they think of cars. When they think of Jeeps, think of flying wheels. When they think of Corvettes, think of flying wheels. When they think of inexpensive cars, oh, I saw Craig also has an 01 Toyota Celica. Call him. So now I have a lot of friends referrals as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, that's Craig, just that's so awesome.
So good. We really appreciate your time. How can the dealers, how can we connect with you? How can we see the stuff that you're doing? Give us your addresses.
Yeah, the best thing, to be honest with you, the best thing about YouTube, I'm just going to say this one last thing, is I get direct messages every day through Instagram based on my YouTube videos. And a lot of it is entry-level car dealers, people looking to get into the business, or people that are flipping cars without a license, trying to learn how to get a license, people that have started a car dealership, but maybe haven't quite got to that point where they're really comfortable in selling and running the business. A lot of those videos people watch, a lot of the how-tos on how to run a successful business, get a lot of traffic, and people message me on and just say, thank you so much. I've learned so much from your video. And think about it, 15 years ago, if I could go tell myself everything I know now, I would be that much farther ahead today. And that's what I'm trying to do for everybody else watching. So I have a good following of entry-level dealers that are really learning the game. And if you ever wanted to find me, just go on YouTube and type in Flying Wheels, and you'll see our entire playlist. And make sure to hit subscribe so you can catch us on everything. And then our website obviously has our inventory, flying-wheels.com, Facebook/flying wheels. Everything's right there. So I stay consistent with the name. Anytime you Google Flying Wheels, I should be the one that shows up. You should see my face with a car behind me taking a selfie.
But you know, that's so cool that you're doing that for dealers. And that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to get content to help dealers because it's so important. And for you giving back time like that, it's pretty amazing. Thanks for what you do, man.
Thanks for your time today, Craig.
Thank you, guys.